But Elizabeth Goitein, co-director of the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program, says that not only is their premise flimsy, all the evidence is on the other side.
The automatic response, I think, to a terrorist attack is, well, we need more information. We should be collecting more information, no matter what that information is. But this particular program was a program to collect the telephone records of Americans. So having those records would have done absolutely nothing to prevent the attacks in Paris. And in fact, that information did nothing to prevent any terrorist attacks during the 15 years that that program was in effect. There had been independent reviews conducted of that program, one by a commission that President Obama established, one by something called the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. These groups had full access to all of the classified information, and they concluded that the bulk collection of Americans' telephone records had little or no counterterrorism benefit.
And yet, presidential candidate Marco Rubio has backed Cotton's bill, saying that it, quote, will provide the intelligence community one more essential tool to help law enforcement connect the dots of terror communications, uncover threats against the U.S. and our allies, and help keep terrorists out of the U.S. Are you saying he's just wrong?
He is wrong. We know for a fact that this program is not an essential tool that they know full well would have done nothing to prevent the Paris attacks. What's happened is that intelligence and law enforcement agencies have become addicted to data. And there's a sense that if only they could collect it all, then we'd have perfect security. But we know that that doesn't work. If you look at the underwear bomber, the Fort Hood shooting, the Boston Marathon bombing, the Paris attacks, in all of these cases, the intelligence agencies had the information. They just failed to act on it. And at least in some of those cases, it's partly because the agencies had too much data. Intelligence agencies are drowning in data, and the real threats here are getting lost in the noise.
I'm sure you haven't missed the fact that the attacks in Paris also fanned the flames of the encryption debate. Now intelligence officials have argued even more vociferously for the idea that tech companies like Apple and Google should enable law enforcement to decode their customers' encrypted messages by building backdoors into their devices.
This is something that law enforcement officials have been trying to get for decades, and there's two reasons why it's never happened. First, the United States can't tell foreign companies what to do. So if we decide to mandate backdoors for Apple and Microsoft, the terrorists will just switch over to services that fall outside of our jurisdiction, or they'll create their own. Al-Qaeda built its own encryption software, and they're not going to build a backdoor for the NSA. So there's no way that backdoors can prevent serious terrorist attacks. The second problem is that backdoors will actually make the rest of us less secure. The technology experts have all weighed in. There is no way to build a backdoor that only the U.S. government can walk through. So as soon as you create that vulnerability in the system, you open all of us up to hackers, to identity thieves, to the Chinese government, companies engaged in economic espionage, cyber terrorists, you name it. There is such widespread consensus among the experts that backdoors would be a net loss for security, and that's even putting aside the privacy interests.
How widespread is this consensus?
Among technology experts, it's pretty much universal. If we're talking about national security officials or law enforcement officials, those who are in office now are probably, I would say, divided. Those who are out of office and can speak more frankly tend to support strong encryption.
If this consensus is so strong that it's just going to make things worse for people who operate legally and will have no impact on the people we're trying to track, why does it keep coming up? It kind of feels a little like climate change.
That's a very interesting analogy. It's natural, I think, for law enforcement officials to prefer fewer encumbrances on what they do. And this is an encumbrance, and so they don't like it.
It also has something to do with the way the intelligence community has been operating. Data collection, at least since 9/11, seems to be the main thing that the intelligence community does. I mean, we keep hearing about the lack of human intelligence, but we've got data up to our eyebrows.
And that's really part of the problem. It's not just a habit, it's an ethos. when you are a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so the imperative is to collect more, collect more, collect more. And we need to stand back. We need to take an objective look at whether there might be a better, leaner and meaner approach to intelligence where the collection is more targeted at the threats we actually face and where there's more attention paid to analysis of the information that we receive rather than just trying to sweep it all in.
So it is now Sunday, let us say, November 29th. Barring Cotton's bill or something else, what is happening?
The USA Freedom Act takes effect. What that means is that if the government wants to obtain Americans' phone records or any other type of business records using these foreign intelligence collection authorities, it has to tie its request to a specific selection term. So that's something like a person's phone number or a person's email address, a person's account. It doesn't have to be as narrow as a single person. For example, the government could use an IP address, and an IP address can potentially encompass hundreds of people. But it has to be a lot narrower than the collect-it-all program that was in effect previously.
Elizabeth, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Goitein co-directs the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.